Welcome to Backstage at Upstage, a presentation of Upstage Lung Cancer, which uses the performing arts to raise awareness and funding for lung cancer research. Here's your host, the founder and president of Upstage Lung Cancer, Hilde Grossman.
Hi, I'm Hilde Grossman, and we're so excited to have you with us today, Backstage at Upstage. And here's my good pal, Jordan Rich.
Hilde, thank you. Another great topic today, an important topic, screening and testing women in the Black community for lung cancer. A program underway with our guest today, Dr. Jeffrey Yang, a member of the Massachusetts General Hospital thoracic surgery team, and two young women working very hard in the study, Deepti Srivanasan and Alexandra Potter. So Hilde, I'll turn it back to you to introduce this important topic, recruiting people, in this case, women from the Black community, for impactful research studies.
Going to have such an interesting podcast today and an important one again with fabulous guests. We have covered at this point several communities that have shown disparities in healthcare. We have a podcast concentrating on Hispanic, Asian, and rural communities. But today, we're going to be considering the Black community in the United States, and particularly Black women. What do we know about lung cancer differences in the Black community versus the white community? Well, we know that Black men and women are less likely to be diagnosed at an early stage where lung cancer is most treatable. So survival rates, unfortunately, in the Black community are lower than they are in the white community. We've also produced several podcasts looking at low-dose CT screening. What we know is that of all the people who are eligible for this diagnostic tool, less than 6%, yes, 6%, take advantage of this means to find lung cancer early. Our guests today are working hard on research into the community of Black women and how to facilitate their participation in low-dose lung cancer screening. Right off the bat, I'm so pleased to introduce you to Dr. Jeff Yang, a surgeon at Mass General Hospital. So welcome, Jeff. Please tell us how you became interested in this community in particular and what the nature of the study is that you're working on.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it. I think that we first started working on lung cancer screening in the Black community probably 3 years ago. And I had the privilege of working with Alex Potter, who is currently a clinical research coordinator at Mass General and also the president of the American Lung Cancer Screening Initiative, and Julie Palmer from Boston University, who leads the Black Women's Health Study. And we found in a study that was published in JAMA Oncology that Black women who are lung cancer patients have a different set of eligibility criteria based on the current USPSTF guidelines. So what I mean by that is it does seem like a lot of Black women who have lung cancer are actually ineligible to be screened under the current guidelines. And obviously that means that the current guidelines are very flawed. And we wanted to do more research in this area because we felt that best chance at helping Black women who have lung cancer is through early detection and through lung cancer screening. And so that got us really passionate about working on these issues.
Can you say a little bit about why they were ineligible? What was it that kept them out of being able to be screened?
Yeah, so what we found was that about 60% of Black women who have lung cancer were not eligible to get screened, and it's because they don't smoke as many cigarettes, what the USPSTF guidelines would have thought. So right now, to get screened for lung cancer, you have to have three different kinds of criteria. You have to meet three different kinds of criteria. One is you have to be between 50 and 80 years old. You have to have stop smoking within the past 15 years or are currently smoking. And then the third is you have to have what's called a 20-pack year smoking history or greater. This concept of pack years is pretty complex and a little bit confusing. Even to me, to this day, it's sometimes hard to calculate. But the best way to think about it is if somebody smokes 20 cigarettes a day for a year, then they have one pack year. And so you have to have smoked 20 cigarettes a day for 20 consecutive years to have 20 pack years of smoking history. And what we found was that a lot of Black women with lung cancer, they just didn't smoke that many cigarettes. And probably the reason why the USPSTF guidelines don't really work that well for Black women who are at high risk of developing lung cancer is because the guidelines are mostly based off of the National Lung Screening Trial, which was overwhelmingly a study of white men and women. So 92% of the study participants in the National Lung Screening Trial were white men and women, and not there were very few Black men and women in that study. And so it's not too surprising in that regard that the guidelines aren't working well for Black men and Black women when the data that the guidelines are based upon are not really from the Black community.
As a surgeon, you clearly see a range of people from all sorts of backgrounds and all sorts of races and also all kinds of socioeconomic classes. What drew you to this particular group?
I've had happy stories and sad stories, and I think both of them have motivated me. So I've had patients who are Black women who, unfortunately, by the time I saw them, actually had stage 4 lung cancer, and they were right at that cusp of actually meeting the criteria to get screened for lung cancer, but because of what we were talking about with the smoking pack your history, they weren't. And so that was very, very frustrating. Actually, unfortunately, one of the patients passed away, and that was very sad for me and also very motivating for me to want to explore and investigate lung cancer screening for Black women who are at high risk of developing lung cancer even further. I've also had happy stories too, where I've had Black patients, Black men and Black women with lung cancer, that the lung cancer was discovered early, but they actually didn't meet the lung cancer screening guidelines. The only reason why the lung cancer was discovered early was because of something else that led to a CT scan that led to the detection of the lung cancer. For example, a lot of patients these days, if they have a bad cold, they'll go to the hospital and they'll get a CT scan to evaluate pneumonia and things like that. And so I've had patients where the lung cancer was discovered through that. And so, you know, the combination of the happy stories and the sad stories were really deeply motivating for me to do further work in this area.
Well, I know for myself, I'm a lung cancer survivor, and mine was found completely by accident. I had no symptoms. I always say, if I could get lung cancer, so could you. So yeah. Could anyone listening to this podcast. But because it was found by accident, I was fortunate enough that it was stage 1A and I only needed surgery. But upstage lung cancer always says survival should not be by accident. So that, you know, we need to take greater efforts to find lung cancer early. So as far as these criteria go for the lung screening in all communities, it's really problematic, especially with women. We had a wonderful podcast on lung cancer in the Asian community, where Asian women are very high in lung cancer diagnoses, and they also tend not to be smokers. So that how are they ever going to find it other than when they get very sick? And then we also had a great podcast with Dr. Narjest Flores, who just talked about women and lung cancer. And again, some of the same issues are there about everybody should listen to that podcast after you listen to this one, listen to that one. But those screening limitations certainly, you know, embrace a number of people, but they leave out so many people. And so I think it's wonderful, the particular work that you're doing. Alexandra, I'll just bring you into this conversation. I know you're working with Dr. Yang and you're still a student. Is that right?
So I am now a clinical research coordinator at Mass General.
No longer a student.
No longer a student, but hopefully soon to be, when to go to medical school. Yeah.
Okay, we need more wonderful physicians in the area. Dr. Yang just mentioned that a special part of the study was in terms of how recruitment took place. Could you let us know how that happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a nonprofit called the American Lung Cancer Screening Initiative, or ALCI, that does a lot of community outreach to increase awareness of lung cancer screening. And so it's a national nonprofit, but we have a really wonderful team here in Boston, and we have students at pretty much every university in Boston, it feels like. So at Harvard, Northeastern, Tufts, Boston University, Wellesley, a really big student team of about 60 students who regularly go out into the community. And so our initial plan with this study was to help to recruit high-risk women out in the community for the study through our different community outreach events. And so we started out going into Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, and doing different events. So we worked with Union Capital Boston, which is a really wonderful organization that holds a lot of community gatherings and resource fairs. And so just started attending these, giving presentations on lung cancer screening to women out in the community who are attending these for social reasons, and just talking to people, generating awareness, and then seeing if there's anybody who is interested in participating, helping them sign up to get screened. And so that was the initial plan. And we've done now about 60 events since May. So we've done 60 different unique community outreach events, primarily in the Black community in Boston. And that's been a huge way of recruiting for the study, and something that's really special and unique compared to, I think, most other studies that don't have the opportunity to do that, and also don't have the opportunity to work with such a wonderful team of students and doctors to get out there and actually do that. So that's the first thing. The other thing that came as a surprise to us as we learned more and got into more recruiting was just how receptive the community was to our outreach, and how willing they were to refer other people they knew for screening. So for example, Debbie, we met her at a community event, a Union Capital Boston community event, and she then referred her four sisters to our study. And then, as Deepthi had mentioned, like 5 to 10 other people. And so this study has really, really gone our recruitment has gone very quickly because of this idea that the community is incredibly receptive and also willing to refer others and help people get more involved. So it's been just incredibly special experience.
I think this is wonderful. I have two questions. I think it's wonderful to hear that you've had such a positive response, because I know that in the Black community, at least in the past, it's often been somewhat difficult because of the mishandling of a number of Black patients, particularly in the Tuskegee experiment. If you haven't been aware of that project, it was a study that was about syphilis, and I won't go and spend our time today, but I really suggest that you know that kind of history of the mishandling of Black men. So that project, once you sort of participate in something that's kind of abused, used and abused your community, I think there's more concern. So hearing that the Black women in the community that you've reached out to are so enthusiastic and should be, it's so important.
Thank you. And I do want to just highlight, I think it's really a testament to our team, in that we're not going out to the community to ask people to participate in the research study specifically, but it's more broadly to just increase awareness about early lung cancer detection and screening, and want to help everyone regardless of sex, gender, race. But as Dr. Yang had mentioned, we have identified that a lot of Black women at high risk of lung cancer don't meet the current USPSTF eligibility criteria. So it's nice to be able to offer them this study as a mechanism to still allow them to access screening and early detection, even while the USPSTF doesn't cover it.
Deepthi, you're also a student who's working with Dr. Yang on this amazing project. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved and tell us what's been the most impactful part of this study so far for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that question, Hildy. So really got involved through our outreach that we were doing through ALSI, the American Lung Cancer Screening Initiative. Even before the study started, we were going out into the community, meeting all of these wonderful people who are just passionate about screening, passionate about early detection, interested in getting screened. And it was always so sad to me when we would meet someone who was maybe 52 years old, had smoked for over 30 years, but had just not smoked quite enough to meet that 20-year guideline and qualify for screening. We would always have to turn them away and say, there's nothing we can do to help you right now. So we were just kind of collecting these list of people who almost qualified, and then Alex and Dr. Yang got the funding for this study, and I was just so happy, like just thinking about all of the faces and the people that I'd met that now we could help. So as soon as the study kind of kicked off, I got back in touch with those people and kind of started being able to deliver the good news that we're able to screen them and help them get signed up for screening. And just like that was such a rewarding experience to be able to help people that we hadn't been able to help before. And I think along that theme, the best part of what we get to do is getting to know these people who are not just patients in our study, but just incredible advocates in their own communities. So they're not just people in our study, but advocates who are so passionate about so many things. And I just learned so much from how they're able to advocate for new causes and just really spread the word. They like teach us how to be better advocates.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear. And I've found personally, it's great that there's coverage for screening. That's the good news. The bad news is, as we well know, especially with women, the largest increase is in non-smoking women. So, da-da, they're not covered. So it's foolish. So there are a lot of reasons why people could or should be covered. We just finished a podcast on radon and the relationship to lung cancer. And then I spoke with someone recently whose diagnosis of lung cancer was because of radon. So she didn't smoke, but she lived in radon. So I think we've just kind of started to nudge forward people who could be covered for screening, but we've got such a long way to go to cover people because the expense is prohibitive for most people. But I'm so grateful that you as a student, you know, have a voice and are doing such great things. So that's just so terrific.
Thank you for all you're doing.
Dr. Yang, what happens when somebody, one of the participants, finds that they do have lung cancer and then are eligible or need to have treatment, whether it's surgical treatment or chemotherapy or radiation or whatever is involved? What happens for these women? Particularly, I think about insurance availability. So some people might have great insurance and some may have none if you're going to a general population in a community. So what happens to these women after this diagnosis is made?
Thank you. That's a great question. So right now for our study, if anybody has a nodule that is suspicious, we'll continue to evaluate that nodule exactly in the same way that somebody who is not part of the study would. For us, fortunately, everybody actually has health insurance. I think it's wonderful to be living in Massachusetts. So we haven't actually encountered an issue with no insurance. But if that were the case, our team here at Mass General would make sure we'll still help the patient out. In that we've never turned down a patient because of any kind of insurance issue. I've actually explored this insurance issue in depth because we wanted to make sure every participant who gets screened does not get charged anything. And so that's why I was pleasantly surprised at just how well Massachusetts health insurance is for the communities that we are in. The other thing I wanted to highlight, going back to your point, Hildy, about just the reception of our team, when I was in medical school, because you had mentioned the Tuskegee experiment, we had studied all that, and a lot of professors and doctors had told us there is still a lot of mistrust of doctors in certain communities. And so I wasn't sure how people would receive our team. It's really a true testament to Alex Potter's leadership, Deepti Srinivasan's leadership in our team. Because even to this day, I've talked to people who do lung cancer screening outreach at other cities. They tell me they have some difficulty, some to a lot of difficulty with getting a good reception or getting the message out. And, and I think that the Boston team has been absolutely wonderful. And through this, we've actually made really great relationships with the community as well, and often have gotten invitations to come back to speak multiple times. And then the other thing that's been great about all this is that the community members themselves and folks who have participated in the Inspire study have actually gone on to tell their friends and family. And so we're really, really excited with just how things have been going with this study.
I think that's very important, so that we don't misrepresent that the whole nation is just receptive to come forward. I think it's a testimony, again, both to our particular community and to Alex Potter and to the hard work that each one of you do. When, you know, any of the students who are doing this outreach are going to face various kinds of questions. And so being able to respectfully answer those questions and understand where they're coming from, to me, this is so important. So I know you've had a number of people who have participated, and some of their stories have stayed with you. And so I wonder if there are any particular participants that you could share a story or something with us today. Alexandra?
A lot of women who have shared just their family history of lung cancer. So they've shared that their father passed away from lung cancer. We had a lady whose sister was just diagnosed with lung cancer and passed away. And so there's been a lot of family history that, and it's been interesting to learn about that. A lot of women also we had a lady who expressed that she was not eligible for lung cancer screening under the USPSTF criteria. She met the age criteria, was still actively smoking, but again, as Dr. Ying had mentioned earlier, she was smoking like 7 cigarettes per day, which just isn't enough to get to 20 pack years, even if you've been smoking 40 years. Doesn't make sense, but right. Wasn't eligible. But her last 8 family members had either died of lung cancer or some other lung disease. And so she was really motivated to participate in the study for that reason. And I think, again, just highlights how poor the current USPSTF criteria are, particularly for Black women. And so that was a study that really stood out. On the other hand, in a different train of thought, is something that's really stood out is just, again, how excited people are to participate. And so our team meets every single lady who comes in for screening at the hospital. We have, it's like a concierge service almost, and it's quite fun, but we get to meet them, we get to walk with them to their appointments, talk to them, learn about their life story, and answer any questions or concerns they have about lung cancer screening. And we've found that we are able to form really strong bonds with them, and also just get them really excited about early lung cancer detection and spreading the word through their community. So I think both of those aspects have been really interesting.
So one thing that I wonder about, you know, I've known people who have no family history of lung cancer per se, who have been diagnosed with lung cancer. And I've known people whose mother, whose aunt, I should say aunt, now that I live in the Northeast, whose aunt, whose mother, whose grandmother, I mean, just a profound family history. Jeff, do you have any comments about the genetic aspect of lung cancer that you think our listeners might want to think about?
Yes, that's a very important point, which is that I think family history is a important risk factor for consideration for lung cancer. And unfortunately, right now, the USPSTF guidelines don't take that into consideration. I think that this is an area that we just as an entire medical community, we need to work as fast as possible to clarify and hopefully provide the evidence that's needed to help the guidelines be better. I will say that right now, for example, the American College of Chest Physicians with their guidelines, they have mentioned that if you as a doctor, if you think that a patient should get screened, that opinion, that is really important. Even if somebody doesn't meet the criteria, but if you as a doctor, if you feel like this patient is at sufficiently high risk of developing lung cancer, that it is appropriate to consider lung cancer screening. That is just only on a case-by-case basis right now. And so a lot more needs to be done for us to be able to come up with something that really, really can make a difference for people who have a family history of lung cancer, and also but for people who have never smoked but who are still at a high risk of developing lung cancer.
I think this is really so important. And I wonder, you know, if money were not an issue, which it is for almost everybody, but if money was not an issue and screening was available and not, I know when I was diagnosed, there was a huge argument about not over-screening because there's false positives that could happen. My own feeling was, fine, give me a false positive. I'd rather have a false positive than ignore, you know, and say there's nothing there when there is. Yeah, if money were not an issue, what would you advise somebody where there are multiple members of a family who have had lung cancer? What would you suggest to them?
I think that's a really important question. I would suggest that they talk to their doctor and come up with a decision jointly that makes sense. So I can't really speak for other doctors and also for different patient situations. But I think for me personally, if somebody came to me and they said, you know, they had a really, really strong family history of lung cancer, I would very strongly consider talking to the patient about the risks and benefits of getting a low-dose CT scan for early detection of lung cancer. But for each patient, it is really different considerations in different cases. Right now in 2024, it has to be on a case-by-case basis. So Hildy, to your point about false positives, I will say that lung cancer screening in 2024 is really, really good. It's even better than the original National Lung Cancer Screening Trial. And the false positive rate has now dropped to the single digit percentages. So it's much, much better. The false positive rate is lower. We now have a lot of data showing that people who get a nodule detected through lung cancer screening, if it has to be further evaluated, the process is also really safe. It's important to highlight that because even in 2024, there are still some doctors or healthcare providers who are worried about lung cancer screening because they are worried that it will lead to harmful events down the line from evaluation of a false positive. The chance that somebody has a really harmful and damaging event from lung cancer screening in 2024 is just exceedingly low. And so I just wanted to put that out there because I know that it's still, even today, it's still a concern among some doctors.
I'm especially glad that you just said that because I've heard all kinds of stories. And my greatest wish is that anybody who's listening can do something that's difficult. That is, speak up to the authority, in this case, your doctor. If you feel genuinely concerned, if you have a family history, I'm not advising any blanket, you know, suggestions, but I am saying if you feel very concerned and you feel like you need or want to pursue this, And if you feel like you get someone who's dismissive, I just want to advocate for patients, human beings, having a voice and not getting worried about somebody who maybe thinks, oh no, I don't want to do this because I might be involved in malpractice because she didn't have lung cancer. So I don't, you know, let's just take a breath, so to speak, no puns intended, but let's take a breath and think about your own history. Think about where you live. Think about if there's radon in your house. And think about all of those things. And if you feel very concerned about what's going on with you, make sure you get your voice heard. Yeah, because delay is the enemy of longevity in lung cancer. So I think that's what's most important. So let me conclude today with asking, where do you see the future of this project? Where is it going? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, thank you, Hildy. Really appreciate the opportunity again to be here and to share with you some of our work. Want to also make sure to get Alex Potter's recommendations here as well, because she has been such an inspiring leader to this entire initiative. What we have talked about is we love to screen over 1,000 women if possible, and then also to expand the study to screening Black men as well, because those issues that we talked about Black lung cancer patients who are women who are not eligible to get screened, find similar issues for Black men who have lung cancer. In terms of there are a lot of Black men who develop lung cancer who would have never been eligible to get screened. So I think that for us, that's going to be a really important next step. And then the other part that I would love for us to do from a study perspective is to have more centers from across the United States. Right now, it's really focused in Boston as well as in Chicago. And we'd love to have more centers across America helping us screen Black women and men who are at high risk of developing lung cancer.
Well, I want to thank both of you, and I also want to thank DeepT for being participants today and helping us think more deeply about many things. One is to have a voice. The other is how important it is to go out into the communities, because it really does take a village. You know, you really want your whole community to understand and be educated and advocate for themselves. So this has been a wonderful podcast and really a very important one. And I will just add that Dr. Yang will also be a guest at our March 26th, 2024 concert, the Upstage Lung Cancer Concert. And you can take a look at our website. And if this is past that time, it will be eventually on our past performances. So he's always got something wonderful to say and has enlisted these amazing students. And so, thank you. Thank you very much. And we'll look forward to talking again for our next podcast. So be well, everybody, and make sure you advocate for yourself.
To find out how you can join Upstage Lung Cancer in raising awareness and funding to beat lung cancer, visit our website, upstagelungcancer.org. We invite you to subscribe and download our podcast, available on all platforms. And we love reviews and ratings. After all, we're showbiz people. There's more entertainment and inspiration to come on the next podcast episode of Backstage at Upstage.